opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Record with Chicago Line is brought to you by Burger King, the Cleveland Clinic, Grand Bahama News, RF Bank and Trust, and Royal Star Assurance.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Chicago Line, your host. I'm so glad that you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Monday afternoon. I trust and hope that you're doing well. If you want to give us a call today on the show, the numbers to do so are 323-6232 or 325-4316 or 325-4259. You can call us from the Family Islands on 00-5720. You can text us today on 422-4796 or WhatsApp me on 439-3043. We are, of course, live on Cable Bahamas, channel 969. That's the way my mother listens to the show. Or you can catch us on BTC Flow, channel 612. Full day today. I have some very special guests in the studio today from the one and only University of the Bahamas. Always got things going on, trying to service the community of people interested in tertiary education or further learning. And I have with me today their excellencies, Tommy Archer and Tanya McCartney, in the studio. How are you, ladies?
Very well, thank you.
Oh, one of y'all sound distant. You got to speak into that mic or get it adjusted.
Very well, thank you.
And was it me? Very well.
Okay, excellent. Welcome to Z Live. I know, as I indicated, the university is always finding ways to satisfy the niches existing out there in our learning appetite. And so y'all have some stuff to tell us today, right?
Absolutely. You're correct. The university likes to stay on the cutting edge. And so we're here to share with you details on a new course that will launch in January of 2024 that focuses on fintech and regulatory innovation.
I mean, that's going to get up for taking this. This is January coming, so this is soon. So if you want to get in that space, this is happening very soon.
Absolutely. Registration will close the second week in January, January 17th.
Now, tell us what fintech is all about. So I've heard this, people have heard this expression, but what is fintech all about?
Fintech, the short of it is the use of technology to innovate and improve on the delivery of financial services. So it's the integration of technology into financial services to improve delivery channels, to create new products.
Now, is this financial services as defined so often by people as the Bahamas Offshore Finance Center or by all the financial entities and industries and sectors involved with our financial services sector? Or is this inclusive of things related to financial services within even the public sector?
Everything to do with financial services. So you hit the nail on the head. It could include financial services in the context of the Bahamas as an IFC, and that might relate to digital assets business and innovations in the virtual asset and the blockchain space. It could also include payment systems and the automation of payment systems to ensure that we increase that would impact the domestic sector as well. We've heard a bit about crowdfunding and how people raise capital through crowdfunding. Well, that integrates technology as well. So every single aspect of financial services and the extent to which technology is integrated to transform and to improve the delivery of service.
So people who may take this offering at the university then walks away with what knowledge, what skills?
Well, our intent, and I would like to say a bit more about the course and then tell you what people will leave benefiting with. This course has been offered for some time by Cambridge University, and the University of the Bahamas is partnering with Cambridge University and its Center for Alternative Finance with the support of the Securities Commission of the Bahamas, who had quite a number of their staff. And seeing the value in it, they thought that we should bring it here to the Bahamas for regulators, for people working in the financial services space, as advisors, attorneys, consultants in the securities space, to give them the opportunity to take the course right here at home, leveraging the faculty of Cambridge University as well as local experts. So it's being
Let me get this. The University of the Bahamas and the Cambridge University are combining to do this?
Absolutely. And wow. So we will have faculty from the Cambridge Center for Alternative Finance who will provide the global or the international context on the various topics that will be covered. But we will also have local experts and practitioners serving as guest lecturers as well. So it will be a mix of Cambridge faculty and local experts who will be delivering content to those who take this great opportunity and register to take the course.
And you might be one of them, eh? Because you know, I know you are one of them.
Well, Archer.
So, Miss Archer is actually the director for CLEARN at the University of the Bahamas. So, I think I will definitely refer that registration to Tanya McCartney. So she may be the participant.
I was trying to get your confirmation that she's one of those experts who could deliver in this program.
Absolutely. So here is our tactic. We want to get the participation from those persons who are key in the industry here in the Bahamas. We will have them teaching the course as we move along. Dr. McCartney will definitely be one of our instructors, I can foresee, in the very near future.
But at this stage, Shivago, I have the awesome responsibility of being the project lead and coordinating the program and making sure that our launch is successful. I've been an adjunct professor with the university in the College of Business now for almost a decade, but because of my experience, obviously, in the financial services space, I have this opportunity to help to frame the course, identify the local faculty, and make sure that we get people registered and having the benefit of this knowledge that the program will deliver.
I know you can. I'm just blowing your horn because I'm a fan. There you go.
Thank you. And to get to your question, you asked the question.
Yes, so people walk away with.
They'll have a better understanding of the international and domestic regulatory environment. So we're going to look at regulation. We're going to look at approaches where some countries have set up innovation centers to stimulate and sort of create an environment for technology to be immersed with financial services. We'll look at the use of sandboxes. They will leave understanding how technology is changing financial services. They will see some things that are happening in other jurisdictions that might impact us in the short to medium term that they've not seen being offered here. And for persons who advise institutional clients, you might advise a bank or some other financial services institution. This course would also be good for you as well because you'll understand the law, the regulations, the risk implications of various products and service delivery channels so that you will be better equipped to advise your clients. So we think CEOs should sign up. We think financial services professionals, IT professionals, because if you're an IT professional and you're dealing with data management, you might want to work in the financial services context, and this will give you insights as to the skill sets and the technologies that are also being used to innovate in financial services.
Because let's be clear, we live in a world where trillions and trillions of dollars worth of trade in goods and services are taking place. But undergirding all of that is a substantial amount of movement of currencies to facilitate these transactions. And undergirding that is a whole lot of technology, a whole lot of applications that are being used in an effort to make all of that happen. And all of that has implications in terms of what the enabling environment is, what the actual risk issues are, what the modalities involved in terms of those exchanges. All of that comes into play. And if you are trying to operate efficiently, feel understanding that dynamic is critical to being one of those persons who provide value added in that particular area. And that's the point of the program, no?
Absolutely. You know, one of the modules that participants will cover is called Deconstructing Banking. Now, you know, when we think banking, we think brick and mortar, we think some level of automation and digitization, but certainly not to the extent that I think we would like to see. But globally, banking is changing. There is open banking, there are digital banks, meaning that you never have to walk into a building. You can access services online. You can interface with persons by video camera. You know, one of the pain points for individuals very often is conducting that due diligence, all the passport, all the address verification. But there's technology that's helping people to use bio data, as well as scanning of documents. All of this is transforming and decommissioning to be. So that's one of the modules. And I think perhaps we will see innovation in our space where we will see some banks eventually that are not brick and mortar. It's not where you walk up to get a loan approved. You upload your documents, you interface with a credit person by video camera, they assess you using lots of data analytics, and you get your loan in with ease, I want to say. So banking is changing. The way that people raise capital is changing with the use of technology. And the professionals who work in this space must know about this transformation and be able to advise their clients in how to navigate in a world of fintech.
In fact, you got one of the big issues in banking for years has been that asymmetry that exists, say, between a lender and a borrower, where mm-hmm. the lender doesn't know the borrower so well, the borrower doesn't know the lender right. so well. So you had this bank as an intermediary in between. Nowadays, the technology exists such that lenders can almost know directly borrowers and borrowers can know lenders directly. And so you can kind of remove some of that intermediary work. And that's where some of the new banking entities are emerging, right?
Absolutely. And so to outline for you what modules will be covered, I'll ask Tammy to just outline for you the modules that we will cover so that you get a flavor around the areas where there has been transformation and people need to stay on top of the developments in the space.
Right, absolutely. So, and I want to make mention here as well that persons who are interested in this course, you are welcome to visit us at our online site. You will, of course, visit ub.edu.bs. And you will be able to register for this course by clicking onto the word Elevate. And once you click Elevate, you will be registering and you can click and apply and even pay for this course. So there's some of the topics that we will be offering in this fintech course will be innovation and regulation. We will also have, as Tanya McCartney has just mentioned, the deconstructing of banking. And we will move on to open finance and digital payments. We will also discuss, there's a full module on digital assets, digital lending and capital raising, regulatory innovation and initiatives. And then finally, we will end the course with regulatory technologies. So this is a packed impact, a packed full class, right? And the class is going to include a lot of the aspects of, as we mentioned, in the financial and technical sector.
Mm-hmm. How long is the program?
We will have a break in between, so you can see it moving probably into about 13 weeks. At the end of the week, at the end of all of these weeks, you will have a capstone. So our students will participate in a capstone, mm-hmm. which will bring together all of their learning aspects throughout the course, and they will present on a topic that they feel that may improve on what they are doing currently within their institution. So it can possibly move from a 12 to a 14-week course.
And then at the end of the program, what does a participant get?
They receive a certificate that will be from the Cambridge Center, which will be issued from the Cambridge Center for Alternative Finance and the University of the Bahamas.
Online or in person or both?
So these courses are actually offered online. So all of our participants will participate in an online environment.
It's online. Because of the time difference, you'll probably be able to, we're planning it so that you can log on and take your class before you go to work. So we're hoping that by 9 or shortly thereafter, because like we indicated, are in the UK. So you can take your course in the morning before you go into the office. What we have done is set it up where in looking at a particular topic, the module, you will have part one, which will give you the international or global context of a particular topic, and then part two will give you the local context on a particular subject matter on one of those modules to make sure that it's contextualized. We don't just want you to know what's going on outside of the Bahamas. We want you to understand the regulatory framework here. We want you to understand what developments are taking place in the fintech space here in the Bahamas. And believe it or not, you may not hear it, but there's quite a bit of work that's being done to integrate technology into the way that financial services are delivered here in the Bahamas.
Okay, as we wrap up, so the deadline for registration is January
17th.
And for people who want to register, they should go where?
ub.edu.bs. And there's the Elevate. They would select Elevate, and they would be able to select the course and register.
Do you want to give them the cost of it?
The cost of the course, and that is inclusive of their registration fee that they will be paying once they log on.
That is fantastic, actually. I think so too. Excellent price.
We've not added a premium onto it. It's the same price that they would have paid if they would have gone, say, directly to take the course. But they're getting it here at home in our time zone from the University of the Bahamas in collaboration with Cambridge University.
Yeah.
You got to come back anytime, and let's talk about it leading into and after the course, so we'll talk about it some more, okay?
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having us.
No, thank you, Dr. Tanya McCartney, Madam Tommy Archer, University of Bahamas, in combination with Cambridge University, FinTech. Oh, you got to make yourself available. Thank you very much, ladies.
Thank you.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Z Live. I'm Shabago Lang, your host. When we come back, listen, man, I am so excited about the conversation we're going to have next. When we come back, we're going to be talking with Dr. Janet Martin and Dr. Davis about this very important topic. So y'all just stay tuned. We'll be back.
It's Whopper Wednesday. Make your Wednesday sizzle and sink your teeth into a flame-grilled beef patty topped with tomatoes, fresh-cut lettuce, mayo, pickles, ketchup, and sliced onions, all on a toasted sesame seed bun with fries for only $5.95, including VAT. This Whopper Wednesday, grab a friend and head down to your favorite BK Nassau location for a flame-grilled Whopper made your way with crisp fries for only $5.95. Burger King Nassau, where taste is king.
Welcome to World Investor Month. Let's talk about how investments behave when inflation sticks around. In a world of rising prices, some investments may shine, like commodities or real estate. Others, like bonds, may lose their luster. To navigate this, diversify your investments. Spread your money across different asset classes to reduce risk. This message is brought to you by RF Bank and Trust and the Bahamas International Securities Exchange. Get started by following us on social media.
Always on the go? Miss the show? You can now listen to Guardian Radio talk shows anytime, anywhere on Spotify and YouTube by searching Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. No, you can also listen by logging on to guardiantalkradio.com and clicking on the podcast tab. Guardian Radio, continuing to provide you with fresh news and smart talk anywhere, anytime, all day.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. I'm so glad that you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Monday afternoon. I have some very special guests with me. You know, I put off our normal Wake Up to Your Life with Dr. Hospital from last week because we wanted to get you all your by election stuff in, and we knew you might be distracted. So we're now going to have one of those conversations that I think is so critical. And we're going to have it with Dr. Janet Martin and Dr. Ariane Davis-Simmons. And we're going to be talking about diabetes today. Diabetes, World Diabetes Month is something that's being celebrated. And we want to talk about this diabetes. And let me tell you something, folks. I remember when I did Dr. Martin, before I have you all come on, I did an executive physical. And the folk told me you are pre-diabetic. And I mean, I was still stunned, to be honest with you, because I didn't figure I would be pre-diabetic. But for all the things that I had heard about diabetes, it kind of sent off an alarm in my head. I just do something to ensure that I wasn't going to go over on to being diabetic. And the truth of the matter is I didn't understand diabetes that well. I still have some things to understand about diabetes. And and diabetes is a manifestation of a challenge that I think so many of us need to understand in order to improve our health. And so I'm so delighted we're having this conversation today. Welcome, Dr. Janet Martin. Hello.
Well, thank you very much for having us again, Mr. Lang. And I hope you are well rested from last week's events.
rested from the talk, yes. I wasn't running up and down like most people, but I was in the talks, yes.
Wonderful. We have with me, I have sitting right in front of me, smiling, Dr. Ariane Davis-Simmons.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure to be here.
It's so good to have you, ma'am. Thank you for joining us today.
Well, great. It's a sensitive topic for many persons. Diabetes, in particular, type 2 diabetes, is what we're going to focus on today because we have such a large percentage of audience being diagnosed with type 2 diabetes, and worldwide, as a matter of fact. The World Health Organization has chosen to focus this year's World Diabetes Day on type 2 diabetes because of the increase of adult obesity in the, you know, throughout the world. They're saying about 90% of diabetics are adults, and they have type 2 diabetes. In the Bahamas, it's the fifth leading cause of death, seventh leading cause of death in the Bahamas. And here in Nassau, what we're seeing in the Bahamas, these results are according to a study, a survey done in 2019 in the Bahamas, we have 7 out of 10 adult Bahamians who present with prediabetes and type 2 diabetes. They're either overweight or obese. And so that speaks to the amount of obese adults we have in this country. I'm going to let Dr. Davis-Simmons share with you what she's seeing out in her practice.
So to add on what Dr. Martin was saying, so we talk about diabetes prevalence in the Bahamas, meaning 1 in 7 adults will have diabetes, but you also have 1 in 3 adults who have prediabetes. And a lot of them don't even know they have prediabetes. And that speaks to where we're not doing a lot of preventive treatment per se, doing annuals and things like that. So a lot of people don't even know that they have prediabetes. And most individuals, when they're diagnosed with type 2 diabetes, may have had it for more than 5 years and they're just unaware. So it is definitely a silent killer. And what is concerning is that we are seeing these type of numbers echoing even in our adolescents. Our kids and young adults are presenting with obesity and prediabetes and type 2 diabetes. So it's a great concern.
So 14%, because sometimes people understand percentages better than they understand fractions. One in seven is 14% of people who have diabetes, and one third is 33% of people who are pre-diabetic. So if you add the two together, we're talking about almost half the population that have either have diabetes or are pre-diabetic.
That is correct. So abnormal sugars.
Yep. So let's talk about that then. Diabetes, because we know typically we've seen in our family members and others, people who some with diabetes, and we know that we've seen the results of it, blindness, kidney failure, heart attack, stroke, and lower limb amputations. The amputations are something that we come to know quite well, because when we see people with a limb gone, we almost think, okay, was this a diabetic who lost a limb because of it? What is diabetes, please?
So diabetes...
And then type 1 and 2, and then we'll talk about
great.
Type 2 in particular.
So diabetes just means you have elevated blood sugars, right? So the main cause of diabetes in adults is going to be type 2. So 90% of patients presenting with diabetes are going to be type 2 diabetics. And in these individuals, there are three main components why they have elevated blood sugars. So one, the liver is making too much sugar. There is what we call insulin resistance. So meaning they make insulin, but the insulin has to work very hard to get the sugars from the blood into the cells. And I like to explain that insulin is a hormone. It's a hormone your body makes. It is the key that opens the door to allow the sugar into the cells to be used as fuel. And then we add on declining insulin production. So yes, they make insulin, but there's a relative deficiency. So meaning because of all of that obesity, the unhealthy diet, their body is just not able to lower the sugars. So when we think of type 1 diabetes, classically we used to think of this being in children, young adults, but it can present at any age. And this type of diabetes is autoimmune. So this means that your body is causing something that causes the destruction of the cells that make insulin. So these individuals they don't have insulin. So they will always need insulin as a form of treatment. Mm. So those are the two main differences.
Okay. Incidentally, I didn't realize this, but the diabetes, at least the mellitus, is it? Means
yes.
Honey or sweet blood. Sweet,
mm-hmm.
sweet. So you actually have sweet blood. So if the sugar is so much in the blood, you can taste it. That's the
indication. That is true.
Wow, that's crazy. So
yes.
And so you have this presentation of people with type 2 diabetes is what we are concentrating on. And so the concern there is what? What is the concern? You got type 2 diabetes. Why should I be concerned that I have type 2 diabetes?
So you're concerned because we know that uncontrolled diabetes, so persistently elevated blood sugars, lead to all the complications of diabetes. So it increases your risk of heart attack and stroke by 3 times. It is the leading cause of blindness in the world. It's the leading cause of lower limb amputations. It also is one of the leading causes of kidney failure. So, I mean, it causes a lot of morbidity and mortality.
And how does the doctor come to know that I have diabetes?
Great. So individuals who are at increased risk of diabetes should be getting screened. So if you have a family history of diabetes, American Diabetes Association says you should be getting screened from 30, from the age of 30. If you are overweight or obese, your doctor should be screening you for diabetes. Okay. Also, if you have, if you're a female and you have a history of polycystic ovarian syndrome, you have a history of gestational diabetes, you should be getting screened periodically. And then also individuals who have other metabolic diseases like high blood pressure, high cholesterol, who are inactive, it should be a part of regular screening. So this talks about, again, preventative care. So you should be going to the doctor for at least annuals, even if you're feeling great, to screen for these metabolic problems. And when we talk about how do we diagnose diabetes, so if you are not feeling well and you do a fasting blood sugar, if it is over 200, then you have diabetes. So that's a random sugar that's done at the point of care. Or you can do something called an A1C. It is a blood test, and it lets you know what has your blood sugars been for the past 3 months. And if you have a A1C of 7% or above, you have diabetes. If you have a test 5.7 to 6.4, you have prediabetes. So to clarify, 6.5 or more is type 2 diabetes.
And that's you. You had when you came to see me, you were pre-diabetic, and that's when you were concerned.
Yes.
You were going on to be sweet.
Yeah. I was definitely on the way. I was on the way, Doc. And then I had my annual physical the next year, and the doctor said to me, "Well, if you were pre-diabetic, we wouldn't know now."
Yeah, and that's the whole key, right? So when you're pre-diabetic, it's the time to take it seriously. This is where, you know, if you're overweight or obese, losing the excess body weight, a minimum of 7.5 to 10%, that can push you back into the normal range. Adopting a healthy lifestyle, a diet that is lower in simple carbohydrates, things like that, you can then roll numbers. So it's something you want to take seriously when you're diagnosed with prediabetes.
You know, Doc, the one thing I learned was that, you know, we oftentimes get caught up in the symptoms. And for me, like, diabetes is the outcome of something going wrong in your body. So, but that's just a symptom. The actual disease is this dysfunction in respect of your insulin. We hear about insulin resistance, et cetera, which I hope you can explain to us in a little while. But then even beyond that is the fact that we're doing some things that cause this to happen that ends up presenting with diabetes, and a great deal of it is related to our lifestyles. Can you help us figure that out from the point of this insulin resistance and all the other things related to insulin? Because insulin, I'm told, is a big deal in the body. What is it?
Yeah.
Why is it a big deal?
Well, so like I said, insulin is a hormone that's made by the pancreas. And insulin's job is to just get to sugar where it's going. Okay. In individuals who have what we call metabolic syndrome, they're obese and they're starting to have elevated blood sugars. They make insulin and they tend to be hyperinsulinized. So their body is pushing as much insulin as it can to help to lower those blood sugars back to normal.
Mm.
However, there's resistant cells. So obesity is really the main reason for the resistance, right? So the fat cells make hormones. And they prevent the insulin action.
Mm.
So yeah, definitely lifestyle has a lot to do with it.
Mm. So that watching weight is not simple. You know, we go to the doctor for checkups, and one of the first things they do is they take your height and they take your weight.
Correct.
Right? You go there and you say, "But doc, you know, I got this terrible stomach ache and so forth and so forth, but you can take my height and my weight." And it's related to the fact that weight is so critical to all these other things happening.
Yes, that's correct. So when they do that height and weight, they are assessing your BMI, which is your body mass index. They want to know if you are an appropriate weight for your given height. So we have normal BMI, then we have when you're in an overweight category. So when you have a BMI of kind of 19 to 24.9, and then 25 and over being overweight, and then 30 and over being obese. So it's something that you should know. You should know your health numbers. You should know where you fall. Is my weight appropriate for my height, what is my blood sugars? What is my blood pressure? What is my cholesterol? So these are what we call your health numbers. And they have a lot to do, a great deal in your overall health and the development.
We're going to take a break right now, but when we come back, I want to turn to something that Bahamians contend with, as we mentioned a little earlier, but just to understand why it happens. Why are people losing limbs because of diabetes? Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. We're waking up to our life with Dr. Hospital today. We're here with Dr. Janet Martin and Dr. Ariane Davis Simmons, and we'll be back after this break.
Child, Fidelity Can on this year with their new festive giveaway. You could win cash, an iPhone 15, get a bill paid off, PS5, all kind of things. Apply for a loan or an ASU savings account, and you could win. Try our call them now. Yeah? 356-7764.
The Grand Bahama News is available every Tuesday in the Nassau Guardian. Buy your local paper at Freeport convenience stores, Western Bakery, DeGregory's Fine Foods, and Bellevue Gifts. Want to reach your Grand Bahama customers? Then call Barefoot Marketing at 827-4578 or message them for ad rates via their Facebook page. Now include classified ads too. Keep up with all the latest Grand Bahama news in the Nassau Guardian newspaper every Tuesday.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Nassau, Bahamas.
I'm not afraid to take a stand. Everybody, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm, whatever weather, cold or warm. Send you know that you're not alone. Holla if you feel like you've been down the same road.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. So glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, where we are waking up to your life with Doctors Hospital. We're here with Dr. Janet Martin and Dr. Ariane Davis Simmons, and we're talking about diabetes. Doc, just before we get to my question, before we took the break, so I want to read this text for you. It says, great show as usual, Mr. Lang. This is a very important topic. It says, I love cake. I love, love, love cake. I am 46 years old. Question, how dangerous is my love of cake at my age, and am I at risk of getting diabetes? Let me just modify that for you, doctors. I love, love white rice. Love rice. Love rice. And I'm 56 years old. So similar question. Go ahead.
Okay. So the risk of the caller's question is, what is their risk of diabetes? So that really depends on multiple factors. So at age over 45 is an increased risk of diabetes, because we know the risk of diabetes increases as we age. And then also plays a role on what are their other metabolic factors, what's their weight, what's the family history. Mm-hmm. Okay. So if, like most Bahamians, there's a significant LMB circumference. So if that caller is obese, has a significant family history, meaning they have one parent with diabetes, you're at a 17% increased risk. If you have two parents with diabetes, you're at a 50% increased risk. So it depends. But when we say does directly, if I have no risk at all, and just does the food itself increase my risk of diabetes, that's more of a complicated topic. So long-term, if you're eating large amount of calories, obviously increases your obesity. And then that's the risk factor. But directly, does one piece of cake cause diabetes? No, but we're layering it on individuals who have increased risk. And in our family history, we can't change our age. We cannot change our race. So, you know, Afro-Caribbeans, non-whites have an increased risk of diabetes in comparison to our Caucasian counterparts. So, you know, in Blacks, we got to take this seriously.
Yep. And another risk, and another risk for the court, for the texter and yourself, Doc. I believe that texter is you.
But no, I'm the rice. No, it's the Texas the king. I'm the rice.
But another risk factor is inactivity.
Yeah.
You're not moving more than 3 days a week. And you're moving when you do is sporadic, you know, sedentary lifestyles. Mm-hmm. That's a great risk. And as doctor said, you know, if you're just eating the cake occasionally, but if you're layering on the cake and you had a plate full of macaroni, potato salad and rice, and then you finish off with the cake and soda, then that's the layering doctor is referring to. Yeah.
And that's our diet. That's plenty of us, right? That's plenty of us. So one of the things I asked Pauline Davis, who's of course an Olympiad, gold medal winning Olympiad. I asked her one day because I had a good little stomach building up and I was near 200 pounds. And so I said to her, I said, you know, what can I do to belly in this weight? You know, she said to me, the first thing she said to me, and Dr. Martin will know this, she said, stop drinking sodas. So I stopped drinking sodas. I reduced my intake of rice and so forth and so forth. And I started intermittent fasting and I watched the weight just drop off. And now, because one of the other issues with these carbohydrates, like the cake and the rice, Doc, is it not that it causes these insulin spikes? And it's that insulin spike that also creates the potential for the resistance, insulin resistance, and also for other issues like inflammation and the like, no?
Yeah, so when we talk about, so all of those foods that you talked about are broken down into sugar, right? So they're starches, they're broken down to sugar in the body. And if you're eating large amounts of it, you are asking your body to make as much insulin as it can to kind of reduce these sugars. So it does lead to insulin spikes, which over time can lead to increased central obesity and insulin resistance.
So this text also says, question, is diabetes predominantly a Black man disease or is it's even split between races? I think you answered that a little earlier.
Yeah, I did. So in terms of being non-Caucasian is an increased risk factor. So we do see more diabetes in not only Blacks, but in Hispanic populations. We see it more in Asian, tends to happen at lower weights. So the ethnicity does play a role, but it's not a predominantly Black man versus Black woman. I would say it affects non-Caucasians in general at the same kind of rate.
And of course, one Texas says, Bahamians have super horrible eating habits. I'm surprised in the Bahamas, 80% of us adults don't have diabetes and other health issues.
I echo that caller's sentiment. Our diet is, I feel that over the years it's deteriorated. And it's also not, it's the quality of the food, it's the quantity of the food. It's, as Dr. Martin always says, the highly palatable foods. So your body gets addicted to these things. So it becomes an addiction to eat these type of foods. So it's a huge problem. We're seeing it in our children, in our adolescents.
They say that, Dr. Martin, you're the nutritionist, they say that the food industry has a search for what is called the bliss point. They say that the bliss point is a combination of sugar, salt, and fat that creates a taste that's addictive. So they are forever taste testing to see whether their combinations of sugar, salt, and fat is creating that I have to have more, I have to have foods are just being like consumed by us all the time. And what we don't realize is practically everything we're eating that's processed has sugar in it, hence the over the consumption of sugar.
That is correct. And they're doing a lot of studies within the food industry. Researchers are doing a lot of research on high fat foods, high salt foods, high sugar foods. And what they're finding is that these foods have, you know, they contribute to the greater portion of the foods that we tend to include in our diets. Those foods also are carbohydrates. Now, the body requires carbohydrates as its main source of energy. So what they've done is they've studied carbohydrates, the effects of different carbohydrates on the body, and how much sugar, the amount of sugar that is released from each type of carbohydrate during digestion. And you might have heard of the word glycemic index. And so out of that study, they've determined that some foods, these are the complex carbohydrates, these types of carbohydrates have more fiber, they produce less sugar during digestion, and those are the low glycemic index carbohydrates. Those are your vegetables, your dark leafy vegetables, and your beans, your legumes, and your cereals, your whole grain cereals. And then the second group of glycemic index carbs are your moderate. And some of those are like our mangoes or watermelons. So they have fiber as well, but they produce a large amount of sugar during digestion. And then we have the high glycemic carbohydrates. Those are the, you know, the foods that we tend to gravitate to more. Those are the high fat, high greasy, high starchy, fried foods. The combinations of those foods, they're very palatable, they're tasty, we love those. And what scientists have determined is these foods are highly addictive because they affect the same center in the brain that is affected when we are a smoker, when alcohol, it's the same area of the brain that is affected. We want it. The patient the other day, I worked with him, and he was doing really well, and he said he lost the first 20 pounds within 2 months, and he said he did that by avoiding, on the ride home, he took a longer and a different route home to avoid two fast food joints that he would normally stop at, have a snack, and then go home and eat dinner with the wife and family. And so this, it's the seriousness of these types of foods that drives us to overeat. It calls your name sometimes, or you pass the place and you smell it.
Yeah, we wanna continue on that vein, Doc, but we got to go to the news break right now. And then when we come back, we'll take that up. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Z Live. I'm Chicago Lang, your host. We're going to take a break for news. We'll be after the news break.
Everybody!
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
I'm not afraid, I'm not afraid to take a stand, take a stand. Everybody, everybody, I'ma walk this road together through the storm, whatever weather.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. So glad that you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Monday afternoon, where we are waking up to your life with Doctor's Hospital. We're here with Dr. Martin, Janet Martin, and Dr. Ariane Davis Simmons, and we're talking about diabetes. Yes, we're talking about diabetes, you know, that thing we hear far too often in Bahamas. Dr. Davis Simmons, we often hear people go into diabetic coma. What is that?
So when we think about in type 2 diabetes, we talk about diabetic coma. It means that the sugars have gotten so high that it's leading to, one, dehydration and what we call increased osmolarity. So there's a thickening in the blood. And it's also related to reduced mentation. So people become more somnolent. There's a change in their neurological status. But it's uncontrolled diabetes. So it's not uncommon that that's a presentation where people may have, where they have very high sugars. They don't know. They're not on medication. And they come in with what we call diabetic coma. Or another name would be HHS.
So we know your blood sugar could shoot up so high, cause you problems. Is it possible for your blood sugar to go so low that it's also a problem?
Yeah. So the thing is, when we talk about blood sugar, we want normal glycemia or euglycemia. So we want your blood sugars to stay in a normal range. So if you are a diabetic, we're saying first thing in the morning, your sugar should be 80 to 130. 2 hours after a meal, it should be less than 180. But especially if you're on insulin or you're on oral meds that causes your body to make more insulin, you also have a risk of low blood sugars, which is called hypoglycemia. And we describe that as a blood sugar of 70 or less. So I remember what Dr. Martin said is that sugar is the main fuel of the cells, in particular your brain. Your brain needs glucose to function. So if your blood sugar falls too low, so you're on insulin or you're on dimicron sulfonylurea, you could start becoming confused. So if it's 60 or less, you may have sweating, feeling agitated, confusion. And the last result, and you can see that when blood sugars fall too low, when they're less than 40.
So let's get it, because, and Doc, I hope you could speak to this too, because I saw myself getting to a point where, like, food was almost an enemy, right? Because I'm looking for, like, danger in everything I'm eating, and I'm kind of like, God, am I doing the right thing? So sugar isn't an enemy. It's a necessity of a healthy body. But we're talking about doing things that causes us to have too much sugar in the blood, right?
Correct. So when we talk about a healthy diet, you know, it's a little bit of what you like goes a long way, right? So we kind of tend to use the plate method, which is kind of half of your plate is going to be low starch vegetables, your broccoli, your cauliflower, spinach, and then a quarter of your plate being your starch, you know, so only a quarter. And you choose which starch you're going to have, and then you have a protein. So it's all about a balance. And that really is the key to life, is a balance. So when you have excessive amounts of simple carbohydrates, you know, your sweets, your cakes, your candies, overdoing the rice, the juices, the sodas, that is what you want to cut out, because that's kind of worsening your blood sugars.
And in the context of my beloved Bahamaland, y'all blame me. Doctors did not say this, but I always say, if you wanted to destroy us, the best way to do it is in our food. Because we are rigid when it comes to what we like to eat. And I believe we just eat more flavor than food. That's true, Dr. Martin.
It is true. It is true. And, you know, we like highly seasoned foods. We want to taste the salt. We want to deep fry. We want to see, you know, the thing about it is we deep fry and then we add more oils to it as well. So I had a patient the other day eating corned beef. I asked the patient, how do you prepare the corned beef? Well, they put oil in the pan. They put some onions and then they put the corned beef. Well, corned beef coming out of the can is already processed. It's already high in salt and it's already high in fat. So I'm just using that as an example for persons to really get the take home message here that we're adding too much salt. We're adding too much sugar. We're cooking it with a lot. And then at the table, we shake more salt. We add more sweetener. And the portions. So the preparation is already detrimental to our health. And then the portions, Dr. David Simmons said, half of your plate ending should be your dark leafy vegetables, your broccoli, your carrots, your lettuce, your cabbage. You know, persons say, well, you know, it's too expensive to get vegetables. Cabbage is not expensive.
No.
You know, tomatoes are not expensive. Onions are not expensive.
Diabetes is expensive.
Exactly. And so it's the portions we're feeding ourselves, even our children. You know, while we were on the break, Dr. David Simmons and I were talking about how children are now showing up as pre-diabetic and type 2 diabetes. And a lot of them are overweight or obese for their ages. Because why? We're giving children the same portions we put on an adult plate.
Right. right. We have a call on the line. Let's take that. Go ahead, caller. We're listening to you.
Good afternoon, Mr. Lang.
Good afternoon, sir.
Yeah, to you, your guests also. I what are their name, doctors?
Martin and Davis Simmons.
You know, when this program came on, believe it or not, I was taking my insulin. And I say, wow, look here. I just was shooting my insulin in my arm. Then after you switch to university.
Right.
And I said, well, let me hurry up and eat my food. Because, you know, sometimes you don't want to take your insulin and forget. And then you forget to eat, and then you have that little thing. You know what I'm talking about, Doc?
Yeah. Yeah. Blood sugar. You don't want to have low blood sugar.
Hello?
Yeah, she can hear you.
Yes, sir, I hear you.
And I hear you talking a lot about when your sugar is high, but you're sweating and stuff. That happens to me a lot. I've been diagnosed with sugar some 29 years now.
Mm-hmm.
And but it is so good, Brother Lang, is that the quality, the amount that I used to take, it is now dropped to less than a quarter of what I used to take before. So, you know, but it affects my eye, my vision in my eyes.
Mm.
It dealt with the retina in the back of my eyes. That's a problem with a lot of diabetics, the sight, the eyesight. You know, you lose a lot of your limbs, you lose a lot of your toes and stuff. But that toe section comes when you then take your bath. You have to make sure between those toes are dried properly. And what I used to try to do is use powder. And the doctor told me, no, don't put no powder. They just dry your feet and put on clean pair of socks every day. And your foot will be good.
That's right.
Okay?
I can be honest.
My only problem is my diet. Yeah. Man, when I see the children eating them, Kentucky, I want come on one piece. One little piece I want. And they raw me. No, that, you know, you're supposed to be. I said, man, one little boy going with the doctors. Thing. They want you to eat a slice of bread, two slices of bread with a boiled egg in the morning with a piece of maybe watermelon or something. Then my cereal, I only could use the Rice Krispies and the regular cereal. They're telling me there's the only two cereal that don't have no sugar added to it. I don't know if the doctor could help me with that or something, some other cereal that I could use with the almond milk for breakfast.
Yeah, well, thank you for calling in.
I would listen in.
Thank you for calling in. As it relates to the cereals, there's a lot of whole grain and bran cereals that you can use. And some of those have nuts in it already, and the nuts are good as well. The cornflakes, the old-fashioned cornflakes, not the ones that have the added sugar. So you could mix up the types of cereals you choose. As it relates to the Kentucky, I'm going to recommend that you stay completely from it. Even one drumstick can raise your blood sugar levels and cause problems for you. Because, you know, we talked earlier about the foods that we're buying now, you know, They're making it, the food industry is making it more. So one piece can lead you to have two pieces and then some more. So I would recommend staying away from it. If you want, you can put it in the oven. There's the air fryer now. And you can season, but watch your seasonings. As it relates, you mentioned about your feet, the care of your feet. And as a diabetic educator, when you come to see me, I go through all of those things. You're doing it right. No, don't put the powder, but you must dry between and check your feet daily. When you take the socks off, you need to check between your toes and do not ever walk without shoes because you lose feeling in your feet because of the nerves. And I'll let Dr. Davis Simmons speak to the retina in the eye and what leads to, you know, problems with your eyesight and the nerves in your feet.
Yeah, so before I start, I wanted to say that when we talk about these complications of diabetes, they come with uncontrolled diabetes. So that means that your blood sugars are elevated and your A1C, that 3-month test, is persistently elevated. with good control of your diabetes A1C at target, those complications don't occur. What we call microvascular complications, the blindness patients, the kidney dysfunction, those don't occur with very good control. So I want to start that way. So if you are diagnosed with diabetes, you want to get good control and maintain good control to prevent those complications. And why the complications happen? It's because of high sugars. High sugars are, the sugars are high for long periods of time. So if we're talking about the eye, it causes abnormal blood vessels to grow behind the eye. Okay, so you have increased vessels growing, and those vessels can bleed. And those vessels can also tear down the important parts of the eye, which is the retina, which is important for vision. So that's how it leads to blindness. When we talk about neuropathy, there are little blood vessels that feed the nerves. Okay, when sugars are high, those blood vessels start to die, the nerves start to die. And that's what leads to neuropathy. You're not able to feel. If you get a nick or cut, you can't feel it as well. So then it festers and it turns into an ulcer. And then you have high sugar, so that it doesn't heal as well. And then that leads to ulcers that lead to amputations. Okay, so all of these symptoms are preventable. And this is the whole concept of diabetes awareness, knowing that you can prevent these complications and you do not have to get them just because you're a diabetic. Mm-hmm.
We're going to talk about prevention when we come back from this break. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Z Live. I'm Shafiq. This break.
I'm not afraid to take a stand, take a stand. Everybody, everybody, come take my hand, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm. Whatever weather, cold or warm, letting you know that you're not alone.
Wherever you are in the world, Cleveland Clinic's world-class care is here for you. From Ohio to Florida to London, Cleveland Clinic treats thousands of patients every year, ranked number 2 in the world by Newsweek. You can trust our caregivers to enhance your experience across each step of your treatment journey. For every care in the world, learn more at clevelandclinic.org/Caribbean.
It's World Investor Month, and we're demystifying the world of investments. Let's talk about risk. Imagine investing as a tightrope walk. On one side, you risk falling. On the other, you have potential rewards. All investments carry some level of risk, even the safest ones. Understanding these risks is crucial to making smart investment decisions. This message is brought to you by RF Bank and Trust and the Bahamas International Securities Exchange. Learn more by following us on social media.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9.
I'm not afraid, I'm not afraid to take a stand, take a stand. Everybody, everybody, come take my hand, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm, whatever weather.
Ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. So glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Monday afternoon. We're here waking up to your life with Dr. Sospital. We're here with Dr. Janet Martin and Dr. Ariane Davis Simmons, and we're talking about diabetes. You know, I don't have as much discipline in eating rice. Other starches I can cut out and deal with, but that rice is kind of like my go-to thing for my meals, especially after evening meals, etc. Right? I learned some kind of ways you can cut down on how that affects your body. So, for instance, if I eat a fair amount of rice, I'm going to ride my bicycle or something for 20-30 minutes, because my understanding is that helps my body consume that rice that is going to be digesting. And so we talked about control, and really at the end of the day, if we understand how brilliant our bodies are, we can use our body's own mechanisms to help us avoid some of the challenges of having too much sugar in our blood, right?
No, so you made an important point. So exercise plays a big role in lowering the blood sugars. So we know that even hours after exercise, so cardiovascular exercise, that those muscles take up the sugar. So it can lower blood sugar over the subsequent hours. So it's very important. We know exercise is important in creating a calorie deficit so that you can help to lose weight. We know exercise is good for cardiovascular health. So the issue is that unfortunately, as a nation, we are eating more and exercising less.
Mm-hmm.
So this, again, comes back to a little bit of what you like goes a long way. Don't fall into portion distortion. So reduce the amount you're eating. You can have the starch. So I never say don't have it, but you're going to limit it. So I usually tell people use a measuring cup. So depending on where they are in, you know, obesity, BMI, kind of a half a cup, and then it's done. Because we all tend to eat more than we think we do, you know? So that's, it's a portion distortion. So when it's done.
That's why I found working with Dr. Janet Martin so helpful, because she's very practical, right? And I always use this example because it worked for me. It really worked. I said to that doc, you know, I really love sodas, right? Or sweet drinks with my meals. And I said, Doc, I'm going to tell you the truth. That's the truth. That's what I do. So, because we were talking about how I eat. And so then she said to me, okay, Chicago, I really don't want you drinking the sodas at all or the sweet juices much at all. But if you're going to do it, you can't do it with the meal. You have to do it after the meal, sometime after the meal, and reduce it by diluting it and so forth and so forth. And that's the God honest truth. That's what I did. I stopped eating it with the meal. I started really, even with the sweet juices, if I have an orange juice, I just want that little bit of flavor, a little bit of something. I put it in some water and that's good enough. And it's worked for me. So we have to find ways, Doc, to help people get by, because, you know, bad habits are very hard to break, aren't they?
Yeah, it takes a while to break a habit that you've been practicing for a very long time. And for most of us, we've been practicing these behaviors since childhood. It begins within the home. It's a social issue that we deal with. And so when persons sit in front of me, I say to them, you know, when I take their nutritional history from them, I smile. For children who come in, they immediately start to cry with their parents because they believe we're going to take all the cookies away. We're going to take all these different things they're eating away. And, you know, with the habits for both adults and children, we do a progressive reduction of what they're eating. And then you look at food combinations. For instance, you like your rice. A serving size of rice is about a third cup. It's not all the time you're going to walk with your measuring cup. So we tell you, use your hand. And I say to persons, open the palm of your hand and eyeball it. Make sure it's less than the full palm of your hand. And that's a third cup, you know. Mm-hmm. So you have to be practical when you're changing behaviors and when you're applying new changes. Because if you go full speed ahead, the person may practice it for 24 to 48 hours and then chuck it. Like I said,
it's not sustainable.
It's not sustainable. It's impractical. It makes no sense to them. And not only that, the types of foods that they were eating have now caused a food addiction. You know, they want it. They pass the restaurant and they clue into that. It's like an addict who a drug addict. If he or she goes back into the neighborhood, well, then and mingle with the same friends, they're going to want it. So, you know, a slow progression of changing behaviors as we go along. What I find is very helpful when I work with patients, I use we do have the food pyramid, but I use our drum. I use the Bahamian drum because when they can identify the Bahamian drum, on that Bahamian drum, it is a food pyramid, but it's shaped like a drum. And it has all of what we eat in the Bahamas on that drum. And so if they could identify that with what we eat, it's more practical to them. But if I give them the food pyramid and ask them to eat some quinoa. What is that to them? You know, or a different type of potato. They're used to yams. Then you can have your yams, but eat less of the yam, American pink yam. So, you know, all these practical changes, they have to be step by step. It's like a baby. You have a baby. You don't take the baby off the bottle and put them right on regular food. You have to wean the baby from your breast, wean them off the bottle. So because of the food addictions as well, we have to wean people off of certain foods and get them active. Activity is key. Are we there?
Yes, I'm here. We had a little break on my part, on my side. We have a caller actually on the line, Dr. Martin. Let's take that. Go ahead, caller. We're listening to you.
Yes, I'm a diabetic, and I was listening to the doctor, and the certain things, like especially when you have to sit with the dietitian, and sometimes it makes it difficult to explain when they tell you to eat starches or what constitutes to starches and the various different mix. And just like how she gave examples of the Bahamian, right? Those type of things should be practiced more with the dietitian and explaining it to the regular people. One of the things, though, being a diabetic, I came across the freestyle Libre, which may not be capable for every and everyone. But what I like about that is it gives you a trend. Your body, you just like how I can't stand getting pricked with the needle. I don't like it. And the ones that doesn't hurt are expensive. And so having a instrument that can be on your skin for 14 days, you can always test and see where you are. Now, if you sin and you drink some soda or some sweet juice like what you see, you will see the response right away after about 5 or 10 minutes that shoots up, right? And so you'll say, oh, okay, I made a mistake. I'll only use half of that amount instead and not the amount that I just drank. So those are the stuff until you could actually wean, like the doctor said, and you can use it and say, okay, this is what I need or this is what I require. The same way, if I know I'm going to eat a meal and I realize how my sugars is decreasing or where it is, or let's say if I'm coming out of a fast or whatever, I would take my insulin before I eat so that when it starts to react, the pattern wouldn't be as severe. Shoot all the way up and then come back down, or what we call a peak or spike. And so these are the type of stuff I try to practice to keep my HbA1c intact, even though it takes a while. But if I continue to watch and keep my sugar levels like 120, or 100, or my fasting in the morning to be 80, I can take my insulin, and after a while I could predict, or I have an idea where it's going to be. Or if I got up at 2 a.m. in the morning and I swipe it and I check it and I say, hey, this thing is up to 190, I could take insulin even though I haven't eaten, you know, which also suggests, like, if you have a little bit too much to eat the night before and you start up and now the food is now moving in your body, the sugar would start to shoot up again. So you could then go ahead and take insulin at night to bring it down so it would stay within the required target level. But I would like to put it out there that thing that none of those doctors are talking about is a good instrument that one can use to try to keep your sugar level where it should be. And when they have to do their HbA1c test, I have an idea of the trajectory as to where it could be. And so I would just like to throw that in, even though some people may not
prefer not to go that way, but I cannot deal with the sticking. The sticking is, okay. I just don't do it. I don't like that. So that's an alternative, and I know other people would.
Thank you for your thank you for that information. I'm going to let Dr. David Simmons take this. We are, Carla, that's very good. We were going to go into that form of prevention and also some of the treatments. You're talking about the continuous glucose monitor, and that is a tool that we use, and there are many of our patients using that because one, they don't like the stick. But there's specific persons, patients that use a continuous glucose monitor. Not every diabetic, we recommend that for. And so I'll let Dr. David Simmons speak to that. You're on insulin, and you seem to have been on insulin for a while. So you know you've learned how to manipulate the insulin ratio with what you've eaten. And a lot of our diabetics who have been a diabetic for a long time have learned how to move along with their sugars. And most diabetics who are on insulin, we recommend the CGM, the continuous glucose monitor. Doctor?
Yeah. So Carla, you brought up an important point. So we've been focusing on lifestyle and diet and physical activity, but monitoring is one of the cornerstones for diabetes care. So if you are on oral medications, if you're doing finger sticks, it should be at least once a day. If you are on insulin, you should be checking at least 3 to 4 times a day. And if you are on insulin, you will benefit from one of these devices, these continuous glucose monitors, which actually work with either your phone, with the reader, can be send your blood sugar to your smartwatch. And sugars fluctuate every 5 minutes. So it helps you to adjust your insulin. It also helps you to know if you're developing a low, because a lot of them alarm. They alarm if your sugars are high, so they help you to make an intervention. But what you're right, monitoring is a huge part. And it also helps with behavioral modification. So you can see how whatever you ate is affecting you. So you realize, okay, I am not at target, which is 2 hours after eating, you should be less than 180. If you're 200, 250, then you realize, you know what, I ate too much of that starch. Mm-hmm. So next time I will eat less. So it does help with behavioral modification and adjusting medication. It helps you to achieve good diabetes.
Thank you for that, Carla. Are you one of our patients? Don't answer.
But Doc, a couple of things here. Firstly, so someone goes to the doctor, whether during a regular checkup or whether they presented with some symptoms, they're diagnosed with type 2 diabetes. Where does treatment go from there?
Okay, so the treatment you'd be offered really depends on what is your A1C, how high are your sugars? So it matters. So if you are presenting with an A1C of 10 or more, your doctor may recommend insulin therapy, or they may recommend multiple medication therapy. So it really just depends. We always couple with lifestyle and diet, and then medications are added on. So all of that may be done at the visit, where you're educated on lifestyle changes, dietary changes, encouraged to exercise, and then your doctor may start medications. And as we talked about, monitoring is very important, so you know how to adjust meds and also adjust your diet.
When does the needle come into play? Because we want to do the needle. I know most people don't want to do needles. So is that always, is there some circumstances where that's unavoidable, or is there always an option? What's the situation with that?
Okay, so to clarify, so when we say needle, I think our patient was talking about finger sticks monitor. Yes. He doesn't like to do a finger stick. But if we're talking about finger sticks, then the option is that you can get a continuous glucose monitor. Those the more ubiquitous one would be the Freestyle Libre, but there's other brands called Dexcom. So that helps you assist that you're able to monitor if you're afraid of doing the finger sticks. But if we're talking about needle in terms of insulin therapy.
Insulin injection, right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, insulin injection that comes in a pen or insulin syringe. So that depends. So we're talking about type 2 diabetics, right? So these individuals make insulin, but because of significant insulin resistance or having high sugars for so long, they may require insulin. So a couple of examples of when that would be indicated. If you have type 2 diabetes and you're coming in what you call diabetic coma, or HHS, hyperglycemia, hyperosmolic state, that you're admitted to the hospital, you're going to be put on insulin. Because insulin is the only diabetic medication that can drop your A1C significantly. So if you're coming in with A1Cs or 10 or more, and we're trying to get you a target of 7. Now, sometimes with these individuals, they don't need insulin forever. They may need insulin in that acute diagnosis phase where sugars are really high. We need to get them quickly controlled where they're on it for 6 weeks to 3 months, and then they're transitioned to oral meds. So it's really a case by case. It's an individualized care. So it really depends on the scenario. Mm-hmm. Most type 2 diabetics who are presenting to the office are going to be started on oral medications. And the amount of oral medications they're started should be based on your A1C. Because we know that with these medications, they're able to lower the A1C by a certain percentage. Okay, so for example, like glucophage, which is metformin, maximum dose metformin, we know can drop the A1C around 1.5%. So it really depends on your target. So if you're presenting with an A1C of 8.5 and your doctor is trying to get you to 7, they may just put you on metformin. But if you're a little bit higher, they may add on meds to get really good control quickly so that we can prevent those long-term complications of diabetes.
Now, we are told that in some instances, well, I'm going to tell you what I was told, so you correct us because that's why we have you here, that in many instances, diabetes is one of the most diseases and that, in fact, it is reversible. Please help us.
That is correct. So type 2 diabetes is a reversible condition for most. It's not for all. Okay, so it's for most. So if you are an obese diabetic, all right, you're diagnosed less than 7 years, we know significant dietary lifestyle changes, losing weight can put you into remission. That being said, if the weight creeps up, and the diet deteriorates, it comes back. So it's not, we don't call it a cure, we call remission. So it's something that you have to actively work at. And I know Dr. Martin has some great case studies of patients who presented with diabetes and they were able to get great control or even remission. So I know she's going to chat about that.
Yeah. Talking about the case studies, in one case, we had a female 57 can't come in, and she was a new onset diabetic. As a matter of fact, I believe she was referred by you, Dr. David Simmons, and she came in with an A1C of 8.0. Now, 8.0 placed her at, you know, type 2 diabetes, and she was overweight. She had just tipped the scale of with a BMI of 32. After working with this lady for 4 months with A1C, with a weight loss of 9.2 pounds, she was able to reduce her A1C to 5.8. So she came out at 4 months in the pre-diabetes stage, because pre-diabetes is an A1C of lower than 6.5. So, you know, as Dr. David Simmons says, some of these patients, they go on one medication, or two medications. In this case, this lady, she was placed on metformin. She took it twice a week. She started exercising 5 days a week for 30 minutes each time. You know, the World Health Organization recommends that we move our bodies for 30 minutes, 5 days a week. That's 150 minutes per week. And I always encourage persons not to miss two consecutive days. Just because mindset is you miss 2 days, then 3 days come along, and you're putting a lot of pressure on your body when you continue to stop and start. So this lady, she dropped the 9 pounds and she changed her eating habits. She started to choose lower carbs, lower glycemic index carbs, and more snacking a lot as well. She cut out the snacks and started to space her meals. And so in 4 months, she had a great reduction in her A1C. Now, we had another gentleman, a doctor spoke about being obese and dropping 10 pounds, 10% of your body weight can positively affect your A1C. And this gentleman, he came in with an A1C of 9.9. He was not new onset, though. I worked with him many years ago when he was pre-diabetic. He lost the weight. And this is when we point to a reversal, remission. He lost the weight, his A1C came back into normal, but then he went right back up with the weight, started to eat unhealthy again, lack of exercise. A1C came back up to 9.9. His weight went up to a BMI of 37. He came in, he said, I'm on two medication. I want to come off of this. I really am serious about changing my lifestyle because he's in his 60s. Within 2 months, his A1C dropped from 9.9 to 7.4. And as doctor mentioned earlier, when you're a diabetic, you know, the ideal A1C we're looking for is 7 or below. And his was 7.4 at 2 months with a weight loss of 10 pounds. So, you know, we are seeing what research has been saying for a long time. When we drop 10% of our body weight, our bodies, like you mentioned, Shivago, they're machines. And so if we give it what it needs, when it needs it, it's going to work for us in a positive way. So he's coming back for his third month A1C repeat, and I am sure with more weight loss that his A1C would be below 7.4. And then I want to talk a little bit about a pre-diabetic. Doctor talked about the pre-diabetes and the insulin resistance. We had a lady come in, and after taking her nutritional history, she wasn't aware that her blood sugar levels was up. And I say to persons, we're walking around here, we're not aware our cholesterol levels are up. We're not aware our blood sugars are up or our blood pressures. And that's why it is important for us to know our numbers, to know our risk, and to know how to respond. After we took her nutritional history, based on what she was eating, I asked her if she would mind doing an A1C. And her result came back the following day with an A1C of 6.3, pre-diabetes. She's in her 60s. She was overweight. She came in with a BMI of 41.6. After 3 months, she lost 17.6 pounds in 3 months just by getting her active and making healthy carbohydrates, because it's the main fuel for the body, making healthier carbohydrate choices, portions, preparation. Her A1C came down to normal, 5.5. Now, she's going to have to continue with that lifestyle. If not, she's going to go right back up again and possibly go into new onset type 2 diabetes. And so, as doctor mentioned, you know, when we start to make these lifestyle changes, they have to be building on each other, layering, because diabetes is a layering disease.
We have a question here, we're going to take a break, actually, and then when we come back, we'll ask these two questions. We'll ask these two questions from Texas, and then we'll wrap up our conversation. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. So glad you could join us. We'll be back after this break.
Come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm, whatever weather, cold or warm.
I ain't marched the car. The lady who run into me marched the car.
I hope she had insurance.
If she had insurance, she hop out, pull out her phone, pull up the Royal Star Assurance app, and bang, she was on a video call with an RSA rep, sending my damage, filing a claim on the spot.
For real? Our insurance have that kind of app?
You gotta go to RSA for that.
Download the RSA app today, or visit rsabahamas.com to submit your claim online. Live chat available weekdays 9 to 5.
Get ready to jingle all the way to Christmas with Fidelity's Festive Giveaway, with over $10,000 in cash and prizes up for grabs. Apply for a loan or open an ASU savings account for a chance to win big. Visit any of our branches for more details. Terms and conditions apply.
Girl, Junior just showed me Bulla Boy in his phone.
What you mean? He take picture of that good for nothing boy?
Shh, you don't want Bulla hair. You say that. You know she always say that's my good child.
So what he doing in Junior phone?
Oh, he there because the police looking for him. He on that wanted list.
Wanted persons in your phone now?
Yes, child. And when police want find anybody quick, after something happened, they can send picture direct to your phone. Go to Google Play or App Store and search for Crack Crime Bahamas, then pick install and it will go straight to your phone.
There is also a section on missing persons.
Yes, girl. Everybody needs to get this app so police can tell us right away when these people go missing. Just like an alert system.
Yes, it has numbers for Crime Stoppers Bahamas so you can call and nobody knows you. Call directly to Miami and get anything about you. I tried the other day and when I hear Junior and his boys talking about where they hide those guns, I walk quick round the corner and call that number.
Cause 328-8477 from Nassau or 242-300-8477 from the Family Islands.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
I'm not afraid, to take a stand. Everybody, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm, whatever weather.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. I'm so glad that you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM for this remaining moments of the show. We're talking with Dr. Janet Martin and Dr. Ariane Davis Simmons of Doctors Hospital. We're waking up to your life with Doctors Hospital today. We're talking about diabetes, folks. And I'm telling you one thing, if you aren't sensitized to the need to watch out for levels of sugar in your blood from the information you get, then I don't know what you want to do. But docs, so I have a question. This text has a question, says, diabetes cause erectile dysfunction? Because I ain't interested in that problem, says this texter.
Yes, it can. So we talked a little bit about neuropathy, and we talked about neuropathy in terms of nerve damage to the feet. But for erections, you have to have intact nerves to the penis also. So if you have uncontrolled sugars and you have diabetes and you have it for a prolonged time, it can lead to nerve damage that also includes the penis. You can have erectile dysfunction. So again, that comes with poorly controlled diabetes over long term.
And this person also, because you know we live in the Bahamas here, they want to know, is there any bush medicine that could elevate or alleviate the risk of getting diabetes?
No. And I kind of figured that question was going to come.
You know it was coming, right?
Yeah, because when patients sit in front of me, the first thing they say to me, one, they come and they're anxious. And the first thing they ask is about bush medicine. And I recommend that bush medicine, you need to let your physician know, because some of the medication that the physician may place you on may interact with that blood bush medicine. No bush medicine can prevent anything. Now, there are some really good bush medicines out there, that could supplement, your vitamins or minerals. But no, they can't prevent it. Really, diabetes is an A1C and your sugars are driven by the food we eat. And the lack of inactivity.
I heard one time a person on high blood pressure medication say to me, "Say, man, you always be worrying. I take my high blood pressure medication and eat what I want to eat." That's a bad approach to medicine taking. Could it be that people who take, for instance, insulin or people who have medicines decide, you know what, well, I'm taking my medicine so I could do what I want to do now?
Yeah, so that's a great point. So still, lifestyle is a big part of it. So even if you're eating large amounts of starch, large amount of processed foods, sugary foods, the amount of medication I'm going to have to give you to keep your, not to keep escalating it.
Mm.
All right. So what we see, what Dr. Martin pointed to, like even with when you add in the lifestyle, and we're not talking about huge amounts of weight or exercise. So losing 7% of your body weight, 10% of your body weight, if you are obese, getting exercising can help de-escalate the amount of medications you need because it helps to improve your sugars. So we do believe in de-escalation of therapy. Just because initially you needed 4 diabetes medication, if you implement lifestyle change, you may need 2, you may need 1, or you may even go into remission where we take you off of medications and you continue with lifestyle therapy.
Like those case studies I just shared.
So, you know, so it's not a good approach to say, okay, now I can eat as much, because especially for my insulin patients, yes, I can control your sugars if you choose to eat this, eat exorbitant amounts, but with that will come increasing insulin doses and increasing waistline. So, you know, lifestyle is very important.
And increasing risk factors too, because, you know, your nerve endings are going to be short and it's going to lead to the retinopathies and, you know, other conditions that are layered with a diabetes diagnosis. And so I want Dr. David Simmons to close with the reason why the World Health Organization has chosen this slogan, Know Your Response.
Go ahead. So that persons can.
Yeah, so they know where to find us, they know how to find us, and they know what to do, that there is help. There are persons out there who are focusing on not only obesity, but on the obesity-related illnesses like type 2 diabetes.
But just before you do, Doc, this text has a question. The continuous glucose monitor, is it sold here in the Bahamas? And where can they get it? And what's the estimated cost?
So most pharmacies carry it. So if we're talking about the Freestyle Libre, Doctors Hospital definitely carries it. But most of the larger pharmacies will have it. The cost will depend on if you're insured or not insured, because insurance would cover up to 80% of it. If you are not insured, the sensor pricing, depending on what version you get, the self-pay pricing would be anywhere between 90 to probably 120 per sensor. And you get 2 sensors a month.
Okay, and now we got 2 minutes. The final question about the UN, the WHO, and this focus they have today.
Yeah. So it's Diabetes Awareness Month. The theme is Know Your Risk, Know Your Response. So I would encourage individuals to get checked. Encourage your doctor to do a HbA1c so you can screen if you have diabetes. Along with that, you should know your other health numbers. What is my weight? Am I at a healthy weight? What's my blood pressure? Is it at goal? What's my cholesterol? Because all of these health numbers play a large factor in what is my risk for diabetes. So get checked. And if you do have diabetes, it's never too late to get good control so that we can prevent these long-term complications.
Just so you know, Dr. Martin, 90 was my glucose the last I checked, which wasn't too long ago. My blood pressure was 117 over 77. My triglyceride was 126, so that's a problem. It was a problem. And my weight is 175.
Look at you. Your kudos. Yes,
not doing too bad, but, you know, I have some work to do still.
Yeah, but we all do. You know, we're not looking for perfection because it is lifestyle. It is, you know, we're not looking for someone to just be perfect in their eating, perfect in their fitness. Life happens. Uh-huh. You know, you may plan to do something and then something else happens. But those numbers are phenomenal. That blood pressure.
Yeah,
Yes, exercise. But and I just wanted to say the numbers so people know you are saying know your numbers. And I'm saying I know my numbers because that's how I get to monitor my metabolic health.
Exactly. Okay. Your health report card. So you should know these numbers about yourself. And then small changes go a long way. All right. No one is in, you don't have to follow a plant-based diet. You know, just small kind of changes go a long way in improving metabolic health.
Yeah. Enjoy your Christmas meal, but just look at the combinations on the plate. Make sure that if you're going to have the macaroni, you make a choice whether I have the macaroni or potato salad, but neither or not both of them. And if you do have a little piece of both, make sure that it fits into the quarter of the plate, less than a palm size. So, and then get some walking in.
You know you're coming back for the Christmas Watch Yourself show. So don't we got lots to talk about before people go to Christmas break. And so, ladies, thank you so very much. We appreciate your professional guidance and information. And we look forward to discussing these matters with you again on another day. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for having us.
Have a good day. Bye-bye.
You too. Ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. So glad you could join us today. God bless you. Stay tuned. Tomorrow, we'll be back.